You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. So hopefully you can all hear me okay. I know some of you follow me on Instagram and you saw that since I came back from Marathon de Sable in Morocco, I've moved into a new house. So as of now, I'm recording this podcast overlooking a beautiful valley and a mountain in my sitting room. So I will eventually plan to convert. I have a room that is going to be converted into a podcast studio. But right now it's got a super bad echo. So as I'm speaking right now, I'm recording from my living room overlooking the mountain and valley on a beautiful day. So hopefully you can all hear me okay. And definitely for some of those scenic views, I've been putting them up on my Instagram story. So be sure to check those out. So today's episode is going to be a Q&A. And the questions that came in today from Instagram. So Brian_Keane_fitness. That's where I'm taking most of the questions for the podcast right now. Some are also coming to the website, briankeanefitness.com. You can send in the questions on the contact form as well. I've been spending a large amount of my time on Instagram at the minute, not so much on Snapchat anymore since the update. So if you've been sending in questions on there, I would advise possibly sending them through DM on Instagram or send them through the website. So first one comes in today. I suffer with really bad IBS. Is there anything you know of that can help? So IBS, also known as irritable bowel syndrome, so that's the abbreviation or the acronym IBS, is also interchangeable with leaky gut syndrome. So effectively, the short of it, without going too much into the intestinal science and what's going on, effectively leaky gut syndrome, IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, is when your intestines start to spasm. Normally it's a case of food particles leaking out through the intestine, hence leaky gut. And what happens, it sends your intestine into spasm, and this manifests itself into either diarrhea or constipation or just a horrible feeling of uncomfortableness in people. So I did a podcast probably about a year ago on fixing stomach problems. Again, I have full disclaimer here, I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on the internet, but I had really bad IBS and really bad leaky gut for a large part of my 20s and for a large part of my teens. And there's a couple of tips and tricks that I'm going to share in this episode that will hopefully help, some nutritional ones, some lifestyle ones, some training ones, and then some supplement tips, because irritable bowel syndrome and leaky gut and any stomach issues along those lines that are largely controllable through lifestyle, you can manage a lot of it, even though you never really get rid of it. I've been messaged before, particularly after that last podcast went out, I think it was episode 70 something, and people were messaging going, how can I get rid of my IBS? I'm like, you don't really get rid of it, you just massively manage it. And the analogy I normally use is kind of like sweeping the floor. You can sweep the floor in your kitchen and it gets clean for a day, but if you leave it for a week and 10 days and 2 weeks, it gets dirty again. So the things that heal and fix your IBS, so obviously fixing the gut, the intestinal wall, some of the things I'll talk about. After that, then it's just managing it and avoiding different trigger foods, avoiding different trigger situations from stress, and making sure that you minimize that as much as possible. So hopefully anyone listening that suffers with irritable bowel syndrome or IBS or leaky gut, and again, it's something that is very, very debilitating. Like for me, it made a mess of my social life for a large period of time because I would be worried and stressed about having an attack if I was on a night out. And there was nights out that I literally just didn't go with friends because I was afraid of what happens if I need a toilet. And it's a really uncomfortable thing. And it can have a really negative impact on just social anxiety in general, which is funny because when you learn about what creates the intestines to spasm through irritable bowel outside of the food and supplement choices, you realize that a lot of it is stress related. So when you have that social anxiety and you're worried about, you know, what happens if my stomach gets sore or I feel bloated and feel horrible, it actually has this negative feedback loop that the cortisol elevates, you feel more stress, and then your IBS is actually worse. And then it nearly becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy of, well, I knew my stomach was going to get bad, I knew my stomach was going to swell, I knew my, you know, gut was going to hurt, and then, you know, that's the way it manifests. So the first thing to look at here is nutrition, because your diet and overall nutrition and the foods you're eating is massive for IBS. And I would nearly, if I had to put a percentage term on it from anecdotal and personal experience, and also with the amount of people I've worked with that have came through my programs who we fixed and managed their IBS. When I say fixed, I mean managed in terms of we found the trigger foods, we found supplements that worked and we healed their gut. Just because it's something I've suffered with myself, something I had to do a lot of research into from different publications on PubMed, different books, trying to figure out what was causing it and what could fix it for me. And then again, your mess becomes your message. And I've been able to help people with it. And the first thing we do is look at nutrition, because if you're eating a lot of processed ingredients, there's a lot of different preservatives and additives added into processed foods that are notoriously bad triggers for people with IBS. Again, a lot of issues with people with PCOS, polycystic ovaries, the same issue. A lot of it, the triggers for people that set off an attack can come from some of those additives and preservatives that are in the food. And when you understand the difference between whole food and processed food, and that the packet of rice that you eat that you put in the microwave that's in a bag is very different from, you know, taking it as a whole pack from, you know, where there's nothing in the ingredient list but 100% whole grain rice or 100% basmati rice. You realize that when a food becomes processed, and again, it's not the processing that's the problem, but it's what happens in the system when they actually put a food onto the shelf so that it has a longer shelf life. And what happened with the example I use in the nutrition section of the Fitness Mindset, my book, was rice. Because what they do is they take out some of the fiber that's naturally in rice and they'll add in different additives and they'll add in different preservatives that will firstly give it a longer shelf life, but also some of those additives and preservatives haven't been around long enough. And in a lot of people, they have really bad triggers in terms of setting off an IBS attack. I know myself, I'm one of those that falls victim to it. One of my trigger foods, and when I say trigger foods, it's a food that is individual for you, that when you eat it, it makes your intestines spasm. It gives you an attack, either constipation or diarrhea or severe bloating in your stomach. Like there's times when I would have an IBS attack, particularly in my mid-20s, and I was lean. You know, I had a six pack in my mid-20s. I was as lean as I am now, so a little bit smaller, but I would have an IBS attack and then I'd look like I was 6 months pregnant until it went down again the following day. And one of my trigger foods was things like packaged chicken, because of all the different preservatives that were put into packaged meat so that they could go into the fridge for significantly longer. So that's the first thing I would advise, is look at your nutrition and make a switch to whole foods as much as physically possible. This is something that I regularly talk about on the podcast for people that are looking to build muscle or lose body fat or get leaner or improve their performance in general, because when you eat foods in their most naturally occurring form, you're going to get all the vitamins and minerals that your body needs. So on top of getting the increase in fiber, which is crucial for just good health and well-being in general, you're also going to get more energy from those foods. So you need to eat less of them if you want to lose body fat, or you're going to have more energy for your workouts if you're in this calorie surplus and want to put on muscle. So that's from an aesthetic point of view and a body composition point of view. That's one of the reasons that I offer to people to make that one switch. But for someone with IBS, I think it's nearly a non-negotiable, because you're one of the official definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If you're consistently having irritable bowel syndrome attacks and you're getting diarrhea or constipation or swelling in your stomach and you're eating the same foods over and over again, it's the same thing that's going to happen. You can't add a supplement in there. You can't, you know, make one little lifestyle change. If you're eating those foods that are giving you an attack and are trigger foods for you, they're going to make it worse. And in the majority of cases, nearly across the board with anyone that I've worked with IBS, making that one change can alleviate a lot of those symptoms, not overnight, but in the space of a week, 10 days. Firstly, the swelling goes down and then the attacks start to become less frequent. So first change I would make is switching. If you're eating any processed foods, anything that has a lot of additives and sweeteners to it, make that change to a whole food alternative, and that would be the first thing I would do. The next thing then is looking out for trigger foods. So this is where it gets a little bit more difficult. And when I work with people in my BKF online program, which is the program I generally recommend for anybody that has IBS because of the tailored nutrition plan as we go along, I work from different macros, different calorie intake and different recipes and then tailor it and tweak it as the weeks go on. But with IBS, what generally works quite well is trying to figure out what the trigger foods are for each person, because they're not always necessarily the same. There's certain ones that tend to be worse with most people, or that tend to upset most people. Things like red wine, really strong dark chocolate, cheese, milk, gluten, bread. These are ones that tend to affect a lot of people, but not all. So identifying what your triggers are, and realizing that those foods that if you eat them, or particularly if you eat them, you know, when your stomach is completely empty, for in my case, I have no problem with things like red wine as long as I have a meal in me. But if I drink red wine on an empty stomach, I can feel a discomfort in my stomach and my intestine. So I would advise finding out and making a list of your trigger foods. Again, sometimes it is a case of just monitoring your food for a week or two and then how you're feeling after those meals, because there's normally one or two ingredients that are going to be way worse for you. And then I would advise eliminating them completely and then maybe consider reintroducing them when your gut has had a chance, or your intestine has had a chance to heal, which I'll talk about a couple of supplements that can help with that. And when you've done that, then gradually reintroduce them again and then make the conscious choice to include them going forward if you want to. But I would do an elimination up front and just give your gut and give your intestine a chance to heal. And that will support you a lot in terms of managing any IBS symptoms that you get. The last one before I get on to supplements then, which I know sometimes can be the quick fix. And the truth is, this is one of the cases that the supplements significantly help. But once you have all your other dominoes lined up first, because if you don't fix the nutrition aspect in the food and you don't fix the lifestyle stressors that I'm going to talk about now, the supplements don't really work, even though they can kind of alleviate symptoms temporarily, but they work incredibly well if you get everything else right first. So IBS is normally set off, and again, this is very personality type dependent. This is very individual dependent. In some cases, I've worked with people and we fixed their nutrition and their IBS all but cleared. Other people, we had to play around with their nutrition. Some already had really good nutrition, but it was lifestyle factors that were stressing them out. Either a stressful job or overtraining, which again is a stressor. And in some cases, I had people that were trying to get really, really lean, or I just kind of come from that overtraining background. Again, all walks of life with people that I work with in that program. And anything that has your body under way too much stress. Something else that's very, very common is a lack of sleep, because the more stress your body's under, and the stressor is relative, like it's cumulative regardless of where it comes from. So training is a stressor. It's just a controlled stressor that's good for your body in general when you don't overdo it. Lack of sleep is a stressor. Your boss shouting at you is a stressor. Being in a stressful or an unhappy relationship is a stressor. They're all creating stress in the body and it's cumulative. And what can happen with IBS, if there's too much stress in your life and too much cortisol circulating through your body, which is your stress hormone, that can make you way more eligible or may more at risk of having an IBS attack. So whatever you have to do in your life that can reduce and control your stress levels is going to be so key and crucial for you if your IBS is generally brought on. Well, hopefully you can hear me okay. There's a tractor driving by me. This shows where I am. I'm out in the country in the middle of nowhere. I love it. It's incredible. And so to come back to my point, the controlling the stress in your life, whether that's through exercise or meditation or, you know, whatever, yoga or stretching or going for long walks or listening to an audiobook or whatever it is that de-stresses you. For some people, are just having sex and hooking up with your partner. Whatever de-stresses you, and you have irritable bowel syndrome that comes from living a stressful life, find those systems and build those systems into your life that support and minimize and make sure that you're not getting any attack that's lifestyle stress related. When you put that together with your nutrition and then you add in certain supplements, they can go a long way. My personal favorites, and there's lots of different supplements out there that are evidence-based and will show to have some effect and some alleviation on the spasm of your intestine. So there are over-the-counter pharmaceutical ones that are normally prescribed. They're actually, you can buy them over-the-counter in the UK and Ireland now. I'm not sure about those of you listening in New Zealand, Canada, and Australia. I know there's a big listener base out there too. And you can buy things like Buscopan, which basically is just an antispasmodic. And what happens with your intestine when you're having an attack, whether it manifests in constipation or diarrhea or bloating, it's a spasm of your intestine. So they're antispasmatics. They do work. And I personally have some in my cupboard at all times, even though I haven't used them in probably a year and a half, because they're a little bit of a safety blanket to know that they're there. Which for me personally, with my personality type, it reduces stress knowing that it's there. I'm like, well, if I do get an attack, you know, I can go to that and I'll, you know, be perfectly fine and it'll reduce the spasm instantly. But the ones that I like myself are the ones that have other benefits and you can take long term and aren't prescription or pharmaceutically given, because they're naturally occurring and they're not going to do any damage to your body long term like certain prescription drugs can. So my personal favorites, one is glutamine, which is an amino acid. And anyone that's listened to this podcast or any other fitness podcast or read, you know, any supplement or bodybuilding book, anything to do with body composition, glutamine is generally a supplement that comes up a lot, because it is an amino acid that has been shown to improve recovery. It's been shown to improve immune function. It's the first amino acid that gets depleted with people that train at a high intensity level. And it supports your immune function, so it can lead you to getting sick if you don't have enough glutamine in your body. And it can also promote natural growth hormone. It's been shown to help shuttle carbohydrates into cells. It does loads of different things. But for people that have IBS, what it can do is it can help, and has been shown evidence-based to heal the gut lining of your intestine, which was what makes glutamine so potent and so effective for people with IBS. So that's my number one. I take 5 grams of glutamine every single morning, more as a prevention. I'm a prevention better than cure kind of guy, and I take it as prevention, knowing that I get all the other bodybuilding and recovery and immune boosting benefits from it. So that's my number one go-to. My next one then is a strong probiotic. So this isn't directly to do with your intestine, but everything in your body is somewhat connected, and particularly your gut and the good flora and the good bacteria in your stomach is going to have an effect on your overall health, your overall energy levels, your overall mood, your brain-gut barrier and the brain-gut bridge, showing the amount of serotonin, your happy hormone, that's produced in your gut. So a lot of people that have, you know, mild depression have been shown that's why they take serotonin uptake drugs, because it's promoting mood and they normally work off the gut. So in a lot of cases, again, but the gut brain link is very, very strongly connected. And I take a probiotic because it hedges my bets on everything to do with my stomach and my digestion and my overall mood and health in general. Now, I use the Super 8 Goals by Udo's Choice. That's personally the best probiotic I've ever used. And as long as it's on the market, it will be the one I continue to use. So that's the one I use. But, you know, Renew Life do a great one. And there's loads of other extra strength probiotics you can use that work tremendously well. So do a little bit of a research, understand the different strains and then what might support your body best. That's my go-to. That's a staple supplement. And if I had to choose one supplement out of anything that I've ever used or continue to use, that's the one that would stay right there at the top of my list, would follow probably by an omega-3 supplement. So that's one that I use. And then the last one is peppermint oil capsules. So if you ever Google IBS alleviation of symptoms or anything along those lines, you'll see that peppermint oil generally comes up, or peppermint tea comes up. And what peppermint does is it can help alleviate the spasm of the intestine, and as a result, give you instant relief from bloating or from spasm that's going to cause constipation or diarrhea. When you take an extra strength probiotic or an extra strength peppermint oil capsule, you can get that antispasmatic nearly instantly. What you'll notice first, and I experienced this, and a lot of people that I've used peppermint oil capsules with, normally 200 mg plus, depending on the body weight of the person. Again, don't take my recommendation on dose, because some of you listening are 40-year-old females that are 35 kilos and some of you are 120 kilo, 24 year old guys. So your dosage is going to be completely different. It's going to be very much based off your body weight, you know, your own personal experience and a lot of other different factors. But I use about 200 mcgs to give you a gauge. And what you find first when you start taking is you get a little bit of acid reflux that you end up kind of burping mint. But every time you burp, it releases the spasm in your stomach. And it's weird until you experience it for the first time. But what I did for a long period of time was at the end of meals, I would just take a peppermint oil capsule. And then I would have like a mild little bit of acid reflux for 2-3 minutes. And then I would feel perfect. Because what was happening to me, and a lot of IBS sufferers are similar, you get so into this feedback loop of your stomach swelling, getting bloated, and then you're fasting, or then you're overeating, or then you end up eating more sugar because your serotonin levels are all out of whack, and then that spasms another trigger, and then you're in this negative feedback loop. So what I did initially was I started adding in the peppermint coil capsules at the end of my meals, and that really, really helped me. So what I would advise anyone that suffers with IBS, and I know I've pulled and fleshed this one out just because I know it's a topic that a lot of people struggle with, and it's something that isn't generally talked about that often because of, again, it's an embarrassing thing to admit that you have, or it's an embarrassing thing to talk about. Again, I don't generally filter on the podcast, so hence why I'm able to talk about it. But I wanted to kind of flesh it out because this is where I'm going to send people when I get any IBS questions, which comes in quite frequently. It's also why I'm going to send clients that are coming through my program to check out this part of the episode. So what I would advise is look at your nutrition first, because that is probably about 80% of it. Then after that, look at the other lifestyle stressors that you may have. And then when you've got all that right, look into the supplements that you can add in that will massively support you. So hopefully if you're listening and you have irritable bowel syndrome, or you know somebody that struggles with it, or just excess bloating, sometimes it goes undiagnosed and that's what it is. It's irritable bowel with people. Long term, now it's getting much better, but for a long time it was just undiagnosed. For me personally anyways, and I know a lot of people experience the same. So if you have anyone in your circle or any friends that are suffering from it, please pass on as part of the episode, and I hope it helps a lot.
Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Clean Cut Meals. I'm really excited to bring Clean Cut Meals on as a sponsor of the podcast, because I know there's a lot of you listening that have such busy lifestyles and can struggle to prioritize the time to cook nutritious and tasty food. And Clean Cut Meals were the meal prep service I used for the lead up to Marathon de Sable, the 250 kilometer self-sufficient run through the Sahara Desert last month. And a lot of you following my journey on Instagram would have seen them tagged in Instagram stories. So I wanted to bring them on as a sponsor of the podcast because they provided me with so much value, even so much since I've got back, because of all my speaking appearances and the different business ventures that I'm in at the minute. I've been struggling myself to prioritize cooking meals, so I've been using them since I've got back, because if you're looking to just stay on track and you want the time saved from shopping, prepping, cooking your meals, I just can't recommend them enough. Their food is awesome. I love the taste. They'll fit it to whatever your goals are. So you can check out their website, www.cleancutmeals.ie. You can check the foods on there. You can make your order. And if you have any questions, you can send the guys an email at info@cleancutmeals.ie. So definitely go check them out, www.cleancutmeals.ie. If you're looking for a meal prep service, this is the one I use, and I cannot recommend them enough. So I hope you enjoy today's episode brought to you by Clean Cut Meals.
So next question, what do you think are the best forms of recovery? So there's a couple of angles I could take this at, because depending on what you mean by recovery, there's muscular recovery, there's central nervous system recovery, there's mental recovery. There's lots of different forms of recovery, but I assume from the context of this question that you mean muscular recovery and just recovery from workouts in general. So I'm going to answer it from there. So there's a couple of things that I quite like. I in my, say, my GA Lean Body program, where I work with a lot of athletes who are training quite a lot, or people in my BKF online program that are working for body composition, there's people that are tight. I quite like different rolling strategies, different trigger points, some experiment with heat and colds, but nothing tops the combination of your nutrition and your sleep, because they're the foundation pillars of recovery, in my opinion. And your nutrition is huge because of whatever you do in the gym, and particularly if you're an athlete or you're just working out for body composition to look better, if you're tearing fibers down in the gym, that's what you're doing in the gym. You're tearing your body down. You don't grow in the gym. You don't put on any size in the gym. You don't actually do anything but tear your muscles down or elevate your heart rate if you're doing excessive high intensity cardio. That's what you're doing in the gym. When you come out, that's when your recovery starts. So a general rule, and there's again a lot of misconceptions around the, you know, anabolic window, when should you eat, when should you start your recovery after your workout. My general rule that I've always applied and I apply to people that I work with is making sure that your recovery starts as soon as the lactic acid clears from your body after your workout. That's when your recovery effectively starts. So what I would advise is that's where the post-workout shake comes in, where people are like, oh, I need to have a protein shake post-workout. That's not necessarily true. A post-workout shake can massively help you. Good quality, high quality whey protein that's flooding your muscles with amino acids can definitely speed up your recovery post-workout. But again, context is key. You may not need that. It may not suit you. You may have an issue with lactose. You may not fit into your schedule where you prefer to have a meal at that time. There's no one size fits all in terms of muscle recovery, but there are best practices that tend to work for a lot of people. And that's why the whey protein shake directly after training is something that is stuck, and for good reason. It's well evidence-backed that it'll flood your body with the amino acids it needs after tearing fibers down to improve your recovery. It's another reason why people take branched-chain amino acids after training. The reason that whey protein is so effective and so good for muscle recovery is it's so naturally highly occurring in branched-chain amino acids, which are leucine, isoleucine, and valine. Like, leucine is your powerhouse amino acid for muscle growth and recovery. So the reason it's so effective post-workout is because it just kind of gives you that recovery kickstart, that recovery process. But it may not be the best thing that works for you. Your overall nutrition is going to play a huge part in your recovery. So your post-workout meal, which I generally recommend when somebody asks, when should I take my post-workout shake? Wait for your lactic acid to clear. What happens with a lot of people, and I made this mistake myself plenty of times, particularly when I was younger, when I started training first and using supplements first, was we hear that, well, you should take a whey protein shake directly after training. And yes, that may be true, but if you're after doing a 30-30 high intensity sprint, or you're after doing a finisher what's got your heart rate through the roof, you take a whey protein shake directly after that, you're going to throw it straight back up, because there's so much lactic acid circulating through your body and you're not going to be able to absorb it. So wait for that to clear, normally about 15 to 20 to even 30 minutes after your workout. That's normally the optimal time to take your recovery shake or your recovery meal, when that lactic acid is cleared. So getting that right, and then making sure that your overall nutrition has everything that you need. Your protein is going to be your foundation pillar in your nutrition, compared to even carbs and fats in terms of overall recovery. Amino acids, which is what protein is made of, there's 20 amino acids in all. Amino acids are the building blocks of muscle. So they're the foundation of every cell on the planet. And they're the building blocks of muscle. So when you are factoring in optimal recovery and nutritional strategy, you need to have adequate protein. That doesn't mean you need to have a load of protein supplements. That doesn't even mean you need to have a load of meat or chicken or fish, the notoriously high protein foods. You may be vegan and using food combinations of different nuts and legumes to get all the essential amino acids your body needs. Your amino acids are broken up into essential and non-essential. Essential meaning that you need to get it from food or supplements because your body can't make it by itself. Your non-essential are the other amino acids that your body can make through other amino acids that you consume. So it's very important that you don't fall into the misconception that, yes, I need a protein shake, or yes, I need to eat a load of chicken, because you may not. You may be able to get it through other food types and food combinations. But the one thing that is advised for the majority of cases is making sure that you are getting enough protein and you are getting enough essential amino acids. Again, the number varies depending on who you talk to. You're going to get different opinions. Some people say you should have a gram of protein for every kilo of body weight. Some people say it should be 3 grams. It depends on what your goals are. It depends on what your starting point is. It depends on what your other macro split is, how much fats and protein you get, or how much fats and carbs you're getting from in the rest of your nutrition. But regardless of what split you have with carbohydrates and fats, your protein is going to be your most important, because that's what's speeding up your recovery. Other things then that come into play, your fats are going to support you with, in terms of, they're going to keep you satiated. They're going to give your body all the essential fatty acids that you need. If you're making good quality choices, like things like flaxseed oil, olive oil, natural peanut butter, natural almond butter, you're getting those essential fatty acids that your body needs. And then your carbohydrate is just going to be glycogen recovery effectively, that when you eat carbohydrate, it will get stored in, for the most part, as muscle glycogen or replenished muscle glycogen, which is what your body uses depending on the type of workout you're doing. Again, context is key. For low intensity steady state, someone that jogs and only runs at a low intensity, you're probably primarily using fat as a fuel source. Whereas someone that's doing a high intensity workout or weight training or something glycolic or glucose based, you're going to be using carbohydrate as your fuel source. So that's why certain arguments like going on a keto diet when you're doing a lot of high intensity work in the gym or you're an athlete playing a sport may not be optimal, because you're using glucose as your primary fuel source. It's what your body's trying to use. Again, there's genetic factors that come into play, but for the best practice for most people, ketosis doesn't tend to lend itself to those high intensity sports as well as, say, endurance running or a triathlete, somebody that's working off fat as a primary fuel source. So what I would advise for nutrition is just get your foundational period of your protein right, and then build the rest of your fats and carbohydrates around what's working for you, around your overall goals. Make sure you've calculated your calories, you know the macros you're taking, and then make sure that you're testing it out to see how your nutrition or see how your recovery is improving or getting worse, and then tailor or tweak it around that. If you're still ridiculously sore after workouts, it may be worth adding in a little bit of extra protein. Or if in my case, I normally increase my leucine or my branched chain amino acids, and that tends to do the job. So keep that in mind, and then combine it with your sleep. Because what happens when you sleep, and the more I read, and the more I consume, and the more I learn about what happens when we sleep, the more important I realize how it is for overall recovery. What happens when we sleep is, on top of all the cognitive things that happen, when you drop into REM sleep, and I spoke about REM cycles in my book, The Fitness Mindset, about how we fall into 90-minute REM cycles, which is effectively when we start downloading our thoughts for the day, and that's when we drop into our deepest sleep, when we start to get all the natural growth hormone, we start to get all our recovery. When you're not getting that quality REM sleep, it can massively reduce your body's ability to recover muscularly, central nervous system wise, and cognitively. So you'll be mentally tired. So I would make sure whatever you have to do to get a good night's sleep, and again, quality over quantity. I spoke about the 90-minute REM cycles and making sure that you, a little sleep hack that I use is waking up after 6 hours, 7.5 hours, or 9 hours, so that I'm not waking up midway through a REM cycle, which makes me groggier and takes me longer to get going in the morning. It's about the quality of sleep. You're better off to get 6 hours of quality sleep uninterrupted, where you were straight into a deep sleep and you didn't wake until morning, than to get 9 or 10 hours where you get up to go to the bathroom 3 times in the middle of the night, because that's the difference between quality and quantity. And when you put that together with your nutrition, and you've got the right training program, and you're not overtraining or overstimulating your muscular system, where you're overtraining the muscle and can't get any blood into it, or your central nervous system overtraining where your sex drive drops, or you can't get hungry, or you can't get full, or you can't fall into a deep sleep. They're all signs of central nervous system overtraining. I've spoken about those on other episodes of the podcast for those of you who want to know more about it. But I would make sure that you get your nutrition and your sleep right. And when you do, what can happen for your recovery can ridiculously improve your results, because the people that tend to get the most done and the people that tend to change the fastest or improve their performance or change their composition the quickest are the people that are recovering the best, because their output in the gym or their output on the field, if they're an athlete, or their output in whatever it is that they're channeling their energy, they tend to get a better bang for their buck and a better return because the recovery is better. So it's a compound effect of getting your nutrition right, having an alignment with your goals, getting your sleep right so that you're muscularly, central nervous system wise, and cognitively repaired, so that you can have optimal training sessions, that you're able to work at your intensity level that's consistent with whatever it is you're trying to achieve. When you do that consistently over time, over 6 weeks, over 12 weeks, over 6 months, over 12 months, it just snowballs and helps one another. And then your recovery leads into better nutrition because you're not tired. You're not tired because you're having better sleep, which can lead to better training sessions. And then you get this beautiful cycle of a positive feedback loop where you're sleeping really well, so you're making better food choices. You're making better food choices, so your training is better, and your training is better, so you feel less stressed, and you feel less stressed, and you're sleeping better, and the cycle continues. So very, very important to get on top of that. As I spoke about, some of the other things I like are, you know, different rolling strategies, different trigger point tension, particularly for people with hamstring issues or trigger points release where there's knots where they need to release that tension in the muscle, or experimenting with heat and cold. So sauna, ice, all really, really relative and really good for certain people with recovery. Tend to be a little bit more, works better to have as a tool in the toolkit if you've got, you know, back-to-back games or back-to-back leg days or whatever way it falls. I tend to keep things like sauna and ice for those kind of spur of the moment, well, this isn't what happens every week, and then use nutrition and sleep as your actual foundation pillars. So hopefully that helps you improve your recovery for whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, working towards your goal. Okay, next question. Any tips for sitting down in front of a computer all day at work? Practically zero steps and I'm wrecked by 5 p.m. before I work out. So I wanted to answer this question because this is something that has been coming up very, very frequently now. And I answered on an Instagram live and I spoke about it at Wellfest when I was doing the nutrition talk for Super Value. And a lot of people gave me feedback on this particular topic that I'm about to cover that it helped so much that they never thought about it that way. And again, some have DM'd since and kept me posted and updated on it. And what I spoke about there was the difference between mental and physical tiredness and understanding that they're not the same thing. Mental tiredness is when you've been staring at a screen all day or sitting in an office all day or going back and forth from meetings and you feel just mentally and cognitively drained. And 5 p.m. comes and you're just like, oh, I just want to go home. You either want to sleep or you want to sit down and watch the TV or you just want some sugary or a pick-me-up. That's mental tiredness. Physical tiredness is if you've been working a physically hard job, so moving blocks and bricks all day and you're muscularly sore and you're physically tired. They're not the same thing. And one of the funny, nearly contradictory hacks that I've used with a lot of my office workers is when you reframe that mental and physical tiredness aren't the same thing and you understand they're not, they don't have the same effect on the body. When you get to the gym and you're mentally tired or you go for a run or you exercise at home or do a workout at, you know, 5 p.m. or 5:30 or 6 p.m., however long it takes you to get to wherever it is you train, what can happen is you feel pretty sluggish for, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes, and then about 10 minutes in, you nearly get this second wind and your body and brain just spring into life. And anyone that has experienced this will know what I'm talking about, that you felt really, really tired at 5, you're pulling yourself to the gym, or you're pulling on your running shoes to go for a run, or do a home workout at home, and you just, it's the last thing you want to do, and then 10 minutes in, you're like, you get this massive surge of energy, and then an hour later when you're finished, you get a second wind, and your energy levels are up again. One of the things I spoke about at Wellfest was, for those of you who have been following the podcast for a while, I know there's a lot of you that are new that have just recently subscribed or recently started to listen. And some of you will already know my backstory, that for 2 years in London, I worked as a primary school teacher during the day and I worked as a personal trainer at night. And I attribute a lot of my energy to be able to do that to the training session I had in between those two jobs. Now, I'll speak on nutrition because it's a massive part, and again, the sleep, similar to the recovery that I spoke of earlier. But what I would do is, in schools in London, you had to be in earlier. So I used to go into work at 7:30. The kids would come in for 9. The kids would leave at 3:30. Then I would stay on for another half an hour and mark books. And I would be out of the gym for 4. I'd be in the gym for 4:30, 5. I would train for an hour, and then I would take clients from 6 to 7 and normally 7 to 8. And that, the only reason I was able to do that was because I was mentally tired during the day after school. Every day, I think for 2 years, I was mentally tired after school because you're obviously cognitively switched on. I was either talking to kids, going through lesson plans, or looking at a computer screen. And I was mentally tired. But every day I'd get to the gym and 5 or 10 minutes in, I'd get a little bit of a second wind and then I'd get more energy. And then at the end of the workout, I would have a completely new surge of energy and I was able to take a couple of clients that evening. That is the difference between mental and physical tiredness. And that hack alone allowed me to do that for nearly 2 years and get my own personal training business off the ground. And then I moved it back to Ireland. Some of you already know that story. So I won't get into it here. But knowing that, regardless of whatever you spend that second wind on, for some of you, it's going to be, you know, just preparing your meals for the next day. For some of you, it's going to be spending, you know, a night in with the loved one or your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband or wife. For some of you, it's going to be playing with your kids because you're not as tired after work. That second wind can not only allow you to stay on track long term in terms of your body composition and whatever it is you're trying to physically achieve because you're not missing workouts, it's also going to help everything else in your life in terms of you're going to sleep better because you've trained, you've got that little bit of controlled cortisol release, which is really good for your body in small spurts. It's why exercise is so good for us. And it can de-stress you, make you feel better. And then you end up having a better night's sleep, which again has this beautiful compound effect I spoke of earlier. You end up training, you feel better, you feel less stress, you sleep better, you wake up in the morning, you have more energy, you make better food choices because you're not reaching for glucose and stimulating drinks because you haven't slept. And then you have more energy throughout the day and then you can train. And then that cycle continues. The only thing that can make that cycle worse is if you're making really bad, poor nutritional choices or dietary choices during the day. So one of the issues of working in an office, and again, I had the same thing when I worked in a school, is normally your food choices, if you don't bring your own food, tend to not be as good. Again, this is so context dependent on the office and the workplace. But in a lot of offices, there's normally lots of biscuits. There's normally lots of chocolates, particularly if it's someone's birthday or if it's, you know, Christmas time or holiday time, or it doesn't seem to matter. I just remember there used to be fucking chocolates in the staff room all the time when I was working as a teacher. So again, I used to just not go into the staff room. I would used to go into other people's classroom and talk to them instead of going into the staff room, particularly if I was, you know, really trying to cut down or lean down for summer, because if you don't want to slip, don't go to slippery places. And that was just my way of dealing with it. I don't necessarily recommend that, but it worked really well for me. It meant I was able to go in and talk in small groups of people, and I wasn't in a staff room with 66 other people, and then having to fight back the I'm a systems over willpower kind of person. I prefer to have the system of, you know, just don't be in the staff room and then have to turn down the box of roses or the biscuits, because otherwise they're just tempting and they're there, and then your willpower decreases and then that can have a negative effect for the rest of the day. So again, find what works for you. You may find that once you pack your own lunch or you make healthier food choices that you don't have any of those temptations. Again, I have a ridiculous chocolate addiction, so it's my own issue with it, and it's what I did to deal with it. So find what system works for you and realize that your systems are always going to be better than willpower. And when you stay on top of your food during the day and you're eating good quality foods, like I spoke about earlier, nutrient-dense foods that are going to give your body vitamins and minerals that you need to keep your energy levels high, you're controlling the controllable there that is going to make sure that you're not physically run down coming later in the day. Now, if you're eating poor food, takeaway at lunchtime, biscuits, you know, at 3 p.m., and then something sugary again at 5 p.m., you may go to the gym and feel sick. So, or you may go for a run and feel sick. So that can happen too. So I would advise staying on top of your nutrition as much as possible. And when you do that, you're going to get all those benefits of training. And again, it doesn't matter what your workout is. It might be a run, it might be a 20-minute HIIT workout at home, it might be going to the gym. That workout that you do is going to give you a second wind, and it's going to improve your overall health in terms of your sleep. It's going to improve your mood, and you'll get this second wind that comes with it. So I implore you to try it for, you know, a week, 10 days. And what happens is you start to get this positive association with going to the gym or doing that workout because you know there's a second wind coming off the back end, and you're not going to be lying on the couch for 2 hours watching The Chase or watching Pointless or watching your favorite soap. For me, it was game shows. And I would get lazy and I would lie down for 2 hours, and sometimes I fell asleep and it ruined my sleep that night. So again, this is a topic I wanted to cover just because that difference between mental and physical tiredness and understanding that they're not the same thing can go a long way in supporting you if you're in front of a computer all day, or you're working in an office, or you're not walking around or that active. And one other little side hack that I'll add on that just came to mind is when you're working in an office all day, and I had a girl very, very recently come through the program that we did this with, that's why it's top of mind. that on the hour, I used to tell her, on the hour, I want you to get up and walk around the office. Don't care what you do, whether it's to go to the bathroom or get a drink or go talk to somebody or go do something, just get up and move. Because if you're sitting at a desk, you know, for 3-4 hours at a time, your whole body just feels tired and drained. And I even do that to this day when I'm recording podcasts. Like today, I'll finish this podcast and I'll write a blog post, and then I'll be working on other projects that I have with people that I'm that are coming through groups that I'm working on programs. And on the hour, I generally, or after every event, so my podcast takes about an hour, I'll get up and move around for 10 minutes, then I'll come back and I'll write for an hour, and then I'll get up and move around for 10 minutes. And that's just a hack that stopped your body and brain getting too tired. Works really, really well with the girl coming through my program, and it's something that I advise experimenting with and see how you feel, so that you're not getting stuck in front of the computer for 4 hours at a turn before you get up. And that's just another little side that can help. So hopefully anybody else that's in that same situation, hopefully that supports you, and be sure to hit me up on DM on Instagram and let me know if that helped. Okay, next question. Hey man, love your stuff and love your book. Would you be able to give me advice on how to increase my libido? So there's a bit of a trend coming through today's episode. It's one of the reasons that I paired a couple of these questions, because there are things you can do to increase your libido. There's certain supplements you can use that are super effective, and I'll get into those here. But the theme of this episode today has been very much on nutrition and sleep. And the reason I added the libido question to the end, because this is irrespective, this is both genders, guys and girls, because you can do a lot to control your libido for both. And this came in from a guy, so I'll use it from that angle, but I'm going to hopefully provide value for girls that are suffering with low libido, or whose boyfriends or partners are suffering with low libido, which I know is a very, very frequent thing. I got a lot of DMs and a lot of Snapchat responses at the time when I spoke on a couple of supplements that people used for their partners and how it basically put a bang back into their relationship. So the first thing I'll advise here is there are certain supplements, as I said, that you can use, and they do work. But if you don't have your nutrition right and you don't have your sleep down, they're not going to work as effective as they potentially could. So before you add in any supplement or you add in anything into your regimen, I would make sure that you're not eating really poorly processed foods. So if you're eating McDonald's 3 times a day, you can take things like Restore the Yang, a Chinese herb, which I'll speak on. You can take vitamin D, you can take zinc, precursors to testosterone. You can take all these supplements, but they really won't do that much, because they're just papering over a crack of a falling building. And what I would advise is audit your nutrition first. Make sure that you are eating good quality foods. And the one little tweak that I would add to that is, if you're suffering from low libido, I would advise experimenting with reducing your carbs for a time and increasing your fats. What happens with a lot of guys, and girls the same, but particularly with guys, is the fats, things like saturated fat that we get from red meat, things like the cholesterol that it improves, they're all symbiotic with improving testosterone in your body. So when you cut back on too much healthy fat, and again, saturated fat was one that's been demonized for years, it's largely been disproven now that the dangers of saturated fat comes when it's combined with the high levels of sugar and refined sugar. Again, each of their own, and you're going to find a study or a post or a publication that's going to support and negate the answers on that. So experiment with it and see how your body responds. But adding in some high quality red meat can give your body that little bit of saturated fat and improve that cholesterol that you need in order to boost your testosterone in your body. So have a look into that. Look into other forms like good quality omega-3s, things like pumpkin seeds that are loaded with zinc, which is a precursor to testosterone, as I'll speak on, which is a supplement that I actually use myself independently. And you want to try and boost your libido as naturally as possible. Again, you can go down the medical route and the pharmaceutical route. I'm not the one to speak on that. I don't have any experience. I don't have any personal knowledge from that area. And I'm not, as I said earlier, I'm not a doctor and don't play one on the internet. So if you have a legitimate erectile dysfunction or problem, then by all means, see your doctor. But if it's just a case of improving your libido, getting your nutrition right, increasing your fats, and getting enough protein and enough quality fat into your system can nearly by itself improve libido in a lot of cases.
Sleep is going to be the follow-up to up to that then. What happens when we drop into sleep, and you see this time and time again, and a lot of guys will experience this and a lot of girls will experience this, when we haven't slept, our sex drive goes really, really low. If it's been consistent nights of poor quality sleep, because the last thing you want to do is have sex. Sometimes you get a craving for it randomly because you're looking for a dopamine hit because your brain's all messed up from not having dropped into REM the night before, and that can happen too. In most cases, we tend to reach for something sugary or something stimulant-y, but for some people, we'll reach if we've got a partner nearby because it gives you that rush of dopamine initially. But for the majority of cases, when you don't drop into sleep, into deep REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, and you don't get that recovery that your body needs, you're not going to get that natural production of testosterone that you get at nighttime. So again, this is the same with both genders. Girls are going to have testosterone too. It's just that the balance and the ratio is going to be completely different from guys to girls. The estrogen to testosterone balance is going to be different, but it's the equivalent that you want the right amount as a female in order to improve your overall sex drive and libido as well. So again, it's relative depending on each person, but not so much when it comes to gender. The process is similar. Females that don't have good nutrition and don't have high quality sleep will suffer the same low libido and they just won't want sex. Again, a lot of hormonal issues can come in. Girls tend to be different depending on the time of the month and on the whole ovarian cycle and everything that comes in with that. So this speaks more general to guys because it doesn't change month to month. Whereas girls, it does. And some of you probably already know that you're either really horny the week before or the week after, or you feel super bloated the week before, or you feel whatever it is that you feel. It's different depending on each girl, depending on the stage of life cycle, depending on your age. A lot of different factors come in, but you know your body better. But the things that you can control outside of your natural menstruation, like anything that's naturally occurring in your body, you can do that with your nutrition and your sleep. The last thing I would look at then is once you have good quality sleep and once you have your nutrition right, there are certain supplements that work very, very well in increasing libido. So the ones I'm going to speak on are the ones that are scientifically proven just from what we know about the body. And then I'm going to use my anecdotal experience, which is quite popular anytime I've ever put it on a Snapchat or Instagram story. So I'll speak on that one at the end. And again, I don't have the science behind it, but I have some anecdotal personal experience with it. And from some feedback from people that have used it that either I've mentioned online or I've actually came through a program that we use directly. But the first thing I would look into is your zinc. So zinc is a mineral that is, again, naturally occurring in things like pumpkin seeds, naturally occurring in things like red meat. It's why it works really, really well for a lot of guys particularly. But zinc is a precursor for testosterone. So precursor means that when you have zinc in your body, it helps your body to create more testosterone. Testosterone is what improves your libido and effectively. And what you want to consider is when you have a high quality zinc supplement, which is what I use because I don't eat that much red meat and I consume a bit of pumpkin seeds, but I do like to hedge my bets with zinc because of the immune boosting support that also comes with it. Zinc is equivalent to, I spoke on glutamine earlier. Glutamine is the amino acid that tends to get depleted in people that train at high intensity. Zinc is the mineral equivalent. It tends to get very, very deficient in high-end athletes or people that are training hard. So it's one of the reasons it's important to supplement it back. If you're someone that has ever trained at a very high intensity level or back-to-back training sessions consistently over time and you found your libido dropped, there's a good chance that your zinc level dropped as well. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, again, compound effect of central nervous system fatigue, body in too much fight or flight, too much cortisol. But another issue could have been that your zinc was deficient and depleted from training too hard and your libido dropped as a result. So that's one supplement to look at. Again, dosage is going to depend on the weight. So I won't go into that because it's very different depending on each person. The next one is going to be vitamin D. Vitamin D, you can get it from the sun. And anyone that's ever experienced holiday horniness fucking knows exactly what I'm talking about. When you go to Spain with your missus, or you know, you go to Spain with your partner, your boyfriend, and you're just super horny all the time, and because it's so sunny. So that's vitamin D largely having an effect on your body. So it's again one of the reasons that people go to fucking Ibiza and you have all these parties in hot countries, because it tends to, sex, drugs, and rock and roll tend to all come together. So those, that's another one that I would look into. I normally supplement with vitamin D for immune support as well, but also for natural testosterone production. So I use a spray. Again, the dosage is going to be so dependent on your starting point. One of the things I get tested for every year, I get my bloods done every year. I always get my vitamin D tested just to see how much I need to supplement back in. So right now I normally do between 10 and 40 IUs to give you an idea. Just because, again, living in Ireland, living in the UK, living anywhere where you don't have a lot of sun, there's a good chance you're going to be deficient in it. So I would look into that. And then the last supplement I would look into is called Restore the Yang, which is a Chinese herb that has an effect directly on kidneys, which can improve kidney function, which can massively improve your libido. And one of the, it's funny because the first time, some of you will remember the story, the first time I put this on my Snapchat, I put up Restore the Yang. I told the story about Restore the Yang, how, you know, I don't use it unless, and I have no intention on never using it again unless I'm in a long-term relationship, because you can't concentrate on anything else. It works really quickly. Like nearly within the first day or two, you notice the difference. And I got a lot, I put it up on my Snapchat and I spoke about where I got it from. So I got it from aggressivehealth.com and they sold out. They sold out all the entire stores. I had the company message me. I can't remember the name of the company. It's some Chinese name. But they sent out, Aggressive Health sent out a load of emails to the people that had ordered. And they were like, why is there so many people ordering it? And they were like, oh, Brian Keane on Snapchat put up a screenshot of it. And they sold out. And that company actually ended up sending me a load of free products as a thank you. Again, their other products were great. But, you know, nothing compared to that Restore the Yang. But what that Restore the Yang does is, the joke I made on Snapchat was, it moves, if you were to scale people on an attractiveness level of a 1 out of 10, it moves everyone from a 5 to an 8 and an 8 to a 10. Because you're walking around and you're ramped up and you feel like you just want to have sex with everybody. Or if it's your partner, you just want to have sex with them all the time. So it is really, really potent. It's the one that I would put a disclaimer on. I'm not saying to use it, but if you do, be aware that it works pretty quickly. And I've had a lot of actually funny DMs, and I put a few into my story a while back, where girlfriends messaged that were going out with their boyfriend who was suffering from low libido, and they were like, changed our relationship, thank you so much. I'm like, I didn't do anything. I was like, that was Restore the Yang's job. But they messaged and said how it had an impact. So the reason I'm sharing it here is, I know it's something that people may struggle with, and some guys, we put so much into it that if our libido is low for whatever reason, we put a lot of our self-worth into how we perform in the bedroom, and it's not necessarily the right way to do it, but we still generally do. And this is something that can help if you're something you're struggling with. And I know there's a lot of girls out there listening who have a higher sex drive than their boyfriend, and this may be something worth looking into and examining more and researching more yourself to see if it's something that will help your relationship. Again, I'm a big believer in, you know, if it's bad in the bedroom, it's bad at the breakfast table. And I'm aware how that can translate, and a lot of relationships can break up over that. So it's one of the reasons I wanted to share it on here. I don't have any evidence-based science to back it up. I'm speaking purely from personal experience, anecdotally, and from what people have sent me and posted to my walls, or have sent me through DM or through Snapchat at the time. So hopefully it helps and supports you. So it's one of the reasons I wanted to share it on here. Awesome. So that's the end of today's episode. So be sure to hit me up on DM if you have any questions or if you enjoy this. And please, please, if you enjoyed it and found value in this, please tag it on your wall on Instagram or tell your friends. It's literally the best thing I can ever hear. If I ever provide value to you on the podcast, I love nothing more than people telling me that they told their friend about it, or they've tagged me on their story on Instagram because they want other people to check it out. That's literally the best feedback I can ever get. So thank you so much for anyone that does that in advance. And I look forward to catching up with all of you next week.